Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle, as always, alongside Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. We've got a very special Veterans Day episode for you today, and we're super excited to bring that to you. First, guys, you know, as the weather starts to turn colder, you know what I've been thinking about is meatloaf.
I love meatloaf. Yes. Mashed potatoes.
Yes. And you know where you can get beef to make your meatloaf is Certified Piedmontese. They have the best Nebraska beef, premium Nebraska beef, raised and grazed in the Sandhills region of the state. If meatloaf is not your thing, Geoff in Lincoln is sitting here shaking his head like the elitist sushi eater that he is. If meatloaf is not your thing and you want a ribeye, you want a filet, you want a flank steak, you want a flat iron, you want a sirloin, you want a New York steak, maybe you want some beef bacon, maybe some beef ribs. Doesn't matter. CP Beef has got it all. Even better, common fans, you can get 25% off anything, any eligible item at cpbeef.com using the promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, common fan. If you want to see it in person, if you like to see it, smell it, and touch it before you buy it, go to your local Mercado butcher shop. There's one in Lincoln. There's two in Omaha. The Mercado shops also have some hot food during the day, maybe over your lunch hour. You pick up steaks for dinner, and you also get yourself a nice hot sandwich. I don't know. Whatever you fancy, you can get it at the Mercado butcher shop. Promo code COMMONFAN, all one word, COMMONFAN, for 25% off at cpbeef.com, especially if you're in the mood for meatloaf. Certified Piedmontese, powering the Husker football team and powering the Common Fan Podcast. Also, make sure to check out our website, www.commonfan.co. We went to TS Web Services to build the site for us. Their team of experts provides top-notch solutions tailored to your needs. Whether you need web development or hosting, they've got you covered. You can trust TS Web Services to take your online presence to the next level. We had a great experience working with them. They were very responsive and delivered high-quality work. Check out tswebservices.com to learn more. Common fans, this is a very, very special episode of the Common Fan Podcast. We're recording it on Sunday. It's going to come out on Monday, November 11th, which is, of course, Veterans Day. We've got a very dear friend of the program, dear friend of each one of ours, joining us today, Nicholas Olson. Nick, how are you, buddy?
Good. How are you guys?
Living the dream.
Fantastic.
Living the dream.
Fantastic. Nice. So Nick goes back to grade school with Maddie and I, and high school with Geoff. Nick and I were locker partners for several years at Pius X Central Catholic High School. Yeah. 6000 A Street, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah. And way out in the country, as Father Dawson used to say.
That's exactly right. And Nick also is served in uniform. And so we had been talking to him and thought it would be cool to get his perspective as we honor America's veterans and honor all who served. And I think it's a good reminder. I was thinking about this today, guys, as I was sort of contemplating what to say. And we just had, I don't know if anybody knows this, we just had an election.
Tuesday.
I read about that.
Google
it. I read about that too.
Google it, Jess. Yeah. And like, you know, obviously America's really divided and people are either elated or distraught over the results of the election. But I think like, and it feels like it's harder and harder than ever to find unity in the country and in the world. and maybe there's more and more disagreement than ever about like universal truths or truths that we can all agree on. I think one that still holds and still stands the test of time is that when anybody gives of themselves to serve in any way, but for me, particularly in uniform, I think we can all agree that is the highest calling, the highest earthly calling anyway, and something that we can all honor and praise and thank all who served, right? And so I want to start by saying thank you to all veterans on this Veterans Day. Thank you to all of you who wore the flag of the United States on your sleeve and served in any capacity in any part of the world. We thank you for serving something greater than yourself and dedicating years of your life in service. Nick, you know, and common fans, I think all common fans are going to agree with us on this and anxious to hear the story. We're going to get into some Husker football stuff too. And, we have some thought provoking exercises since we're coming off a bye week and we don't have a game to talk about. We're going to kind of talk about the state of the program. And Nick also happens to be a huge Husker football fan. So we're excited to get your thoughts on that too, Nick, but, we'd love to hear just your story of service and kind of like, why, like, what brought you to decide to serve in the first place, why you chose to do it, how that came about. And then I know you served a tour in Iraq and a tour in Afghanistan, and to the extent that you'd like to talk about that as well, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. So I graduated in 01, of course, with you guys. Kind of just college was not my thing, really. I gave it a couple college tries and it just didn't work out for me. When I was a freshman in college though, 9/11 happened, and that kind of just always kind of stuck with me. So I'm kind of a 9/11, you would call it. I served in what you would call the global war on terrorism. So it was definitely 9/11. And then growing up, I was always enthralled with the Army. I loved military history. I loved movies about the Army. Both my grandfathers were in the Army. It always interests me. And then I just kind of got the bug in me. I was 23, not really doing a whole lot, and just went to the recruiting office and signed up, and away I went. So yeah, definitely 9/11 was a big part of it.
When you that day you walked into the recruiting office, did you intend to sign up that day, or were you not sure?
I was about 90% sure I was signing up. I was really nervous because, as you guys know me, I'm not rah-rah like tough guy and not into fighting and stuff like that, or at least I wasn't before the Army. But I just wasn't that type of guy, you know, so I didn't know if I had what it took to be in the Army, because you always think of these rough and tumble guys that are in the armed services, you know?
So like, how does that, like, and then are they like, all right, your bus to basic training is over here, or like, what, like, how does that work? Do you have like a week or a month, or like what happens next?
For me, it was, I went and took the test at MEPS, like a military entrance processing center up in Omaha. I went and took a test like 2 days after I went into that office. And I think I went in on like June or May 27th. And I think I shipped out like June 29th. Like it was a month of just doing tests and just making sure I was good to go, physicals, stuff like that. And then away I went. So
Olson, I envision you like signing up for that and being like, Casey Ryback, like, yes. Navy SEAL.
Yes.
Like, that's how I figure you envision the military at that point. Like,
yes. Yes. For how much I thought I wouldn't adapt to the Army, I loved the Army. Once I got there, I mean, it's a little overwhelming your first day or two there, because you go through processing, they shave your head, give you a whole bunch of shots, stuff like that. And then I would say it's like 3 or 5 days of processing in South Carolina. And then you actually go to basic training on a bus. They ship you across post and you go to actual quote unquote basic training. So
what's it like at basic? I assume there's guys, some guys who could probably run 10 miles and other guys who can barely put one foot in front of the other. Like, how do they manage that kind of mix of guys and gals, of people who probably come from all different backgrounds and certainly all different, you know, fitness levels. Some of them are probably like Jeff and they've never run in their lives.
Yep. And
what the hell is your problem?
I think that's the thing I loved about the Army was you have your backwoods guys, Montana from the South, upper Northern Michigan guys. You have guys from the streets of Philadelphia, the streets of New York City. And then you also have quite a few people. I didn't really know this, but like the territories. So you have like American Samoa, Guam, Puerto Rico. There's a lot of Puerto Ricans in the Army, you know, and people trying to gain their citizenship by going into the Army. So you just have a lot of walks of life. And I mean, you get there and they put you in a whole bay of maybe 200 guys and the lights go out on your first night there. And I mean, there is like grown men crying because I mean, there's some people that have never been away from home and it's just overwhelming for them, you know?
Yeah.
So, wild. But it's just kind of, it's amazing the way the military, the Army has, it's developed a system to train men and women.
Were you in decent shape when you got there?
Somewhat decent shape. They taught me how to run in the Army. I've never been a good runner. I was all right at push-ups and sit-ups, but I mean, I went in at 213 pounds and 9 weeks later, I was 181.
Holy smokes.
So they took off like 35, 40 pounds. And so you lose that weight and you're running and push-ups become easier. Running becomes easier. I mean, you just lose the weight and that's eating 3 meals a day. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And then where were you after basic? Where were you stationed or what came next?
I went to, it's actually, I think it's Fort Cavazos now, but it was Fort Hood when I went there in Texas. So I arrived at Fort Hood in February of 08 and then March of 08, I shipped out to Iraq. So I went basic all through training, stuff like that, training in Georgia, more training in Missouri. And then I ended up at Fort Hood. And right when I got there, they're like, your unit's leaving for Iraq. Like, and there was guys that, you know, they'll put in like a hardship, like, no, I'm not going. And I just, you know, I just said, that's fine. I'll go. Like, I have no problem going. And so that put me in a good light with my leaders and stuff like that. I mean, it's just overwhelming to get to your duty station. 1 month later, you're on a plane for Iraq. So
what's the time from when you walked into the recruiting office to being shipped off to Iraq? Like, what's the time? Like 5 months, 6 months?
I think I want to say it was like May 27th, 07. I walked in the recruiting office and I want to say like March 3rd of 08. So roughly like 10 months of training.
Yeah.
About 10 months of training. So. Yeah, it was intense.
Wow.
But
wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And that's a hell of a turnaround.
Along with military history, I've always been fascinated with geography and world history. And so they're like, yeah, you're going to Baghdad, Iraq. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. This is awesome. This is exciting, you know, like an historic world city. I mean, you're never going to see, you're never going to pack the kids up, put them back in, you know. So I mean, I got that out of the way, but I loved it. I mean, I saw historic. I mean,
check it out,
you
the
see
one.
The Tigris and the Euphrates rivers. I mean, if you're any sort of biblical person, you know the Tigris and the Euphrates. I mean, they're historic rivers, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
To see landmarks and stuff like that in person, you'll never see as a citizen. Probably that was cool too.
And if you don't want to get into this, no problem at all, but can you, what was the experience in Iraq like, or like what were you doing when you were over there?
Yeah. Yeah. I served, it would have been kind of like Eastern Baghdad-ish. I was based out of Fob Rustamaya is what they call it. And so it's kind of like Eastern Baghdad. And we mostly, I mostly drove when I was in the army. I was always a good driver. I knew maps, I knew directions. And so as they put me in a truck, I just kind of was good at it. And so they just kept me there. And I drove pretty much my whole time there. But yeah, I just, it was March of 08 to March of 09, I was there. And so it's different. I mean, there was heavy, heavy fighting in places like Fallujah and even where I was, but Iraq's kind of different. Like we weren't fighting a lot of Iraqis. And I'm guessing I never saw ISIS over there, but I'm guessing ISIS is a lot of the same thing, that it was a lot of foreigners that came into Iraq to fight us. Like you would get guys that would kind of, they would on the internet or somewhere radicalize them, bring like 20 guys over. And then when they get there, you know, take their passports from them. And then you have 20 guys in a house and it's basically like, okay, you're fighting for us now. You know, I mean, a lot of those guys knew what they were getting into, but there were some foreigners, you know, Syrian, Iranian, Jordanian, like places like that, where they came to Iraq to fight us. And we did fight some Iraqis, but it was a lot different than it's portrayed. Like a lot of the Iraqis were just kind of caught in the middle of it.
Wow. Can you tell,
Go ahead, Mario.
So I remember you telling me a story, and maybe you can share this or not, but I remember you talking about how you were a driver over there, and was there some driving test where like everybody's going around the cones and trying not to hit them? And then you got in there and didn't you like just start driving over them?
Yes. Yeah. That was in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri during driving test. Training. Yeah. That was in training. But yeah, I think some of that stuff that helped me a lot, you know. But
the rationality that you had made sense to me, because you said, you know, if I'm driving, we're trying to get away from somebody. I don't care if I hit a fucking cone.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And when I was over there, they had these things called EFPs, and it was basically like a bomb with a piece of copper in it. And when they blew off that bomb, it projectile like made that huge piece of copper into a bullet, basically. And that would go through, that was going through our tanks, Humvees, up armored stuff, it was going through. And so it was a dangerous time to be a driver in Iraq. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. And Nick,
sorry about the F-bomb. That just totally slipped out, guys. The Common Fan Board of Directors is going to be all over me on that.
Yeah,
one.
The board's going to be all You're over done. That one. That's You're a first. That's a first on the Common Fan podcast.
Mark, is that the first F-bomb?
That's a first. Down. Yeah,
absolutely.
It is. Episode 81. That's a first. So you know, it's kind of like the PG-13 movie. It just happens about once a movie.
Yeah.
And people know it's not a regular thing. Sorry, kids. Not a regular thing on the program, but you know, we're talking about serious stuff here.
Yeah, we are.
And so Nick, I've never known this, and forgive me for not knowing this, but you were on active duty. You were not in the reserves, right?
Yep. I was active duty from, it would have been like June of 07 to January of 2012. I was on active duty.
I just asked because it'd be, if you were like in the National Guard and you were deployed, you might be with a bunch of guys and gals from Nebraska, for instance.
Yep, yep.
Whereas in this case, you were with people from all over. Is that right?
All over. Yep. Yeah.
So we'll try to bring a little bit of levity to the whole thing. And you've always been a huge Husker football fan. What is the extent to which you're able to follow what's going on, say, during the college football season when you're deployed to a war zone?
Yeah. And I mean, with all this stuff, every person's experience is different. The FOBs are set up different. Sure. At our FOB, we had all of them basically have MWRs, morale, welfare, and recreation. It's like the gym. And then they have like a TV room. And then that's like they have books, like a library. That's where your internet access is, where you like, you know, and phones. So that's where you like communicate with people in the States and stuff like that. So at that time, they had like, it was two or three stations, the Armed Forces Network. And it's basically like they'll pick college football games. So if Nebraska like isn't good, or if there's a better game on during our time, it's not going to be on. And schedule wise, it just didn't really line up. When I was in Iraq, though, I did the one game I saw was the Henare Kick, Nebraska against Colorado, the day after Thanksgiving.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah.
So I think, was it a 57 yarder?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be a 50 great plus one to for see
57,
over there.
58 yards. Yeah. So yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah. And that'd, from that'd beginning nice to boost. End, we like, I watched that with like 50 other guys. So that was quite the experience. I had two other guys. It's so weird. I had two other guys. One guy, his younger brother, was a diehard Nebraska fan. And this other guy, a staff sergeant that I served with, was a diehard Nebraska fan, both from California. No links to Nebraska whatsoever.
Weird.
They just grew up loving Nebraska. And so they watched, the guy watched it with me because his younger brother always watched Nebraska games. And so I got to see the Henare kick, the Sioux interception. I mean, it was an unbelievable game. It's probably top 10 Bo Pelini games. So,
no doubt. Yeah.
No doubt. That's incredible. And then you also, you served a tour in Afghanistan as well, right?
Yes. Yep. Well, so I went May of 2010 to August of 2011. I was in Afghanistan. And so I wanted to just preface this by saying there was, I mean, heavy, heavy fighting and stuff in Iraq, but I mean, nothing compared me to Afghanistan. There was no foreign fighters in Afghanistan. Like, I mean, when those guys fight, I mean, they're going to stay until the last guy is fighting, you know? I mean, when you hear like the Taliban and stuff like that, like Afghanistan for me anyways, and I was in Kandahar, was a whole different animal. It was like, I don't know if like their great, great, great grandfathers fought with Genghis Khan and that's where this comes from. But like they drove out the Soviets in the 80s and then eventually we left there. But right. Afghanistan was, I mean, like guys that had been farming that valley for thousands of years, their families have. And so, yeah, completely different and more rugged terrain, stuff like that. Were you
driving there too, Nick?
Driving too, yeah. Yep. Yeah. Gotcha. And Afghanistan was mountains, desert, and then in Kandahar City there. So it was completely different, a lot tougher driving, communication-wise. It's just, it's like the caveman days over there. So, and I just want to preface that, like Iraq has bad stuff that went on there too, but Afghanistan was just a completely, I mean, you hear Iraq, Afghanistan, there are both wars going on at the same time. But Afghanistan was just so much tougher. I mean, it was just unbelievable because I went in, there was a lot of guys that hadn't deployed in my unit, that guys that left after Iraq and I stayed in. And then we trained up and then we went to Afghanistan. And I was like, well, I've already done this. I've been to Iraq. There's nothing that I can't do. Within like 2 weeks, I was like, oh my gosh. We are going to have to spend 14 more months over here. This is nothing. Like these guys are like the A team compared to Iraq, you know? So
wow.
Whenever I hear somebody served in Afghanistan, I'm always just like, oh my gosh, man, holy cow. And Iraq was tough too. So
sure. Yeah. You only had about a year at home and in between those, right?
Yep. Yeah. And that was all training. So yeah.
Okay. Nice.
Well, I mean, just, God bless you for the service. Thank you for the service.
Yes.
Is there anything, I mean, would love to, I could sit here and talk about this all day. Is there anything else you want to share about that time? Or like, I'm curious too, like what does Veterans Day mean to you? Is that kind of one of those days where you stop and reflect, or does that happen more spontaneously throughout the year? Maybe not as much on Veterans Day, or like, what is that like for you?
It does. I mean, Veterans Day does mean a lot to me now that I've served and stuff. It sometimes it does feel surreal because, as you know, we're getting older, you know, and I remember when I was a young kid, like the old guys at the VFW and stuff. Now I'm one of the old guys at the VFW, you know, so it's weird. It's weird how life comes full circle like that. But yeah, I reflect on my military time. There's something every day that reminds me, or I think about a buddy or something. But Veterans Day just means so much to me. There's not too many WW2 guys left, if any, probably now. But when we were little kids, it was World War II guys were the old guys. And now it's Vietnam guys. So I have so much respect for the World War II guys, the Korean War guys, Vietnam, you know, the first Desert Storm. So just the generations that came before me that paved the way, that made the Army what it is today. That's what I think about. I think about the older generations. And I mean, obviously the wars were so big back in the day that somebody in your, you know, family was a veteran at some point, whether it's a grandfather or a great grandfather, you know? So it's a good day to reflect and kind of like seek out your family history and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to go back to one thing you said, sorry. That your point about a couple weeks in Afghanistan, and it was like a different level for you. And it was like, holy smokes. And knowing you had 14 and a half more months, well, how do you do that mentally? What do you do? Like, where does your mind go? Or like, how do you like, do you just kind of get in the groove? And it does, I mean, I don't want to suggest it gets easier, but it gets more manageable. Or how does that, like, what do you do?
Yeah, it's crazy. You kind of just, I mean, the Army really trains you for it. I mean, I had great leaders and stuff. Like 2 weeks in, I hit an IED in Afghanistan. And as you guys know, if you can see, I have a huge gap in my teeth. And I was talking like I like to do when I was driving. And we hit an IED and I bit my tongue. And the only thing that why I still have a tongue that they didn't have to reattach it was I bit down and the gap there was in my teeth is where I didn't bite, and then it held on. And I figured this out. When you bite your tongue and they sew it kind of back together like that, your tongue swells up to the size of your mouth. There's like no place else to go. Like I couldn't really talk or breathe hardly at all because my tongue was so swollen up. So
wow.
It's pretty crazy stuff. So luckily I have a gap in my teeth, and that's why I have tongue still. They would have been able to reattach it, so they say. But so stuff like that.
It's a beautiful gap.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like I said, I just was kind of like, I just thought going into it, I thought it would be totally different. And now, you know, looking back on it, I had no clue. There were two different countries, two different people. I mean, two different histories of their countries, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey, go ahead, Jeff. Go ahead.
I do have a question. This is, I want it to be more lighthearted.
Yes.
So I've watched a ton of movies with you growing up, Nick.
Yes.
You mentioned that you loved Army movies.
I did. I do. Fiction, still do.
Fictional or actual real portrayals or based on true stories, what is your favorite military movie? I'm going to put you on the spot there.
Favorite military movie?
And they can be fictional or real.
That's going to be tough for him.
I'm gonna say Saving Private Ryan is my favorite military movie.
I'm gonna have to probably agree with you, to be honest with you. It's either or what was the one with Mel Gibson?
We were soldiers.
That was awesome too. That's a good one.
That was a good one.
Yeah.
Some good shit out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Well, we are going to pivot to some Husker football talk here, but again, Nick, thank you for your service. Thank you to all the veterans out there for your service.
I do have one more comment.
Yeah, please.
When I was in Afghanistan, I saw one game also. I saw one game in Iraq, one game in Afghanistan. And I think they're two of the best Bo Pelini games, because in 2010, I saw Missouri at Nebraska. The Roy Helu game.
Yes.
And if you remember, it kind of reminds me of the Colorado game this year, that like, if you go back and watch that game, it's burned into my mind. I haven't watched it forever, but Ron Franklin and Ed Cunningham did the game. And like right off the bat, Roy Helu's just breaking like 60, 70, 80 yard runs. And it was like the 90s. I feel bad for kids going to Nebraska games now, but like, it's always fun. Like the floodgates just open right at the beginning of the game. And the whole game is just basically just one big celebration.
Oh,
and yeah. It kind of reminds me, like the Colorado game this year. It was like, we got this. Let's just party the whole game. It's just celebrating with all your friends during the game. It's just right. Like the best thing ever. So that like was like one of the best memories of Afghanistan was like, and if you remember, Missouri had beaten Oklahoma.
Yes, number one Oklahoma the week before.
And so, I mean, and that Missouri team was loaded too, but they just didn't show up that day. And like,
yeah.
Ricky Henry, DJ Jones. I mean, there was like huge holes for Roy Alou. And I mean, everything was just clicking that day for Bo Pelini and the Huskers. So
that's one of my, I've said this, I've been on record saying that that's one of my favorite Husker games I've seen in person in my lifetime. Yep. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So that's my one Husker memory.
Over I love there. That's got to be like a huge boost when you're over there and you're away from home and, you know, dealing with the kind of stuff you're dealing with and getting to watch a game like that and seeing them win like that. You got to see two pretty good games.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's pretty cool. You're sitting around with like 50 other guys and the TV comes on and it's just all red. And they're like, you're looking live at Lincoln, Nebraska. And I'm like, that's my hometown. That's where I'm from. And, you know, some of these guys don't come from the best places in the United States. So they're like, I can't believe you're from there, man. That's where you're from. And I'm like, yeah. It feels a little surreal. Like it's a different world you're looking at, you know, where you're sitting and you're like, oh my gosh, there's people that I know that are at that game, you know? So
yeah,
it's so still cool though.
That's
to see
so
it on
cool.
TV.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, appreciate all your insight, Nick. And again, thank you for your service. Thank you to all the veterans. Happy Veterans Day to everyone out there. We're so thankful for you and for your service. And it's just so interesting to think that everybody's got their own story. I mean, there are literally hundreds of thousands, probably millions of them, like that. And we're grateful for every single one of you.
100%.
We're going to pivot to, we got an email from a loyal listener and it's a good reminder. Send us an email with your thoughts, Common Fans, commonfangbr@gmail.com. We love engaging with our listeners. And this was a really thought provoking email about kind of the state of the program. Before I get into this, guys, though, real quick, I wanted to give one other shout out to friend of the program, James T. JT. He's going through some health battles and he's putting up a hell of a fight and he's doing a great job.
I love you, buddy.
We love you so much, buddy. We've been thinking about you and just wanted to give you a shout out to JT as always.
Love you, JT.
Love you, man.
All right. So this is really interesting. This is an email. I've never, just so you guys know, whoever's listening, we never usually like read your whole name unless you like want us to or give us prior authorization. So this is from a listener. Ryan G is the last initial, but he's a regular listener, said he loves the show. Thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that. I'm going to hit the high points. I'm not going to read the whole email, but it was really thought provoking. He said it's a little bit frustrated about where things stand with Husker football, but I think it probably reflects maybe where a lot of people are right now. He says, here we are again as Husker fans, one game away from bowl eligibility and lacking the confidence to believe deep down it is going to happen. So he says, if we do not get to a bowl game, it kind of raises the question whether we have reason to believe the Rule era is going to be all that different from the Frost era. And he cites some comparisons. Slow start year one with reasons for optimism in year two surrounding a new quarterback. That's one. Moral victories around games with Ohio State. That's an interesting one. Losses that should have been wins, but no wins that should have been losses. Talented skill position players in the slot. He cites Wandale back in the day and Ja'Cory Barney now. Side of the ball that gives us flashes of confidence, the offense with Frost and the defense with Rule. A highly sought after coach who hired a bunch of his friends to make up his staff. Below average special teams. That one's really hard to argue
that's
with.
Yeah, putting it lightly. Was that one in all that's caps?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Below average.
Yeah.
And so he kind of also, he goes on, and I won't read the whole thing. He goes on to make the point that you could even make the argument that, you know, parts of the Frost era, at least through year two, looked even better than what we've seen from Coach Rule's teams. So, and he wraps it up by saying, if we go 5-7, we'll head into the offseason not wondering what might have been, but looking in the mirror, and will cause us to ask, will it ever get better? There is one, he ends on a positive note, common fans. There is one simple solution. Do something Frost never did. Win 6 games. We have 3 games left, and if you get one, you will not only give Nebraska fans an excuse to go to a bowl game over Christmas, but you will give us something we desperately need, the belief that this is going to be different. And he ends it with, to quote Al Davis, just win, baby.
Okay. But, that's a great email, Ryan.
Great email, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks,
I love Ryan. Al Davis. Rest in peace.
Amen. Amen to Al Davis. A shout out to the Al Davis quote. Yeah, appreciate Davis.
Love Mark, too.
Oh, gosh. Yes. And his barber.
Appreciate the thought-provoking email. Again, commonfangbr@gmail.com. Everyone's always welcome to reach out to us. Anytime people do, we try to read those emails and use them as discussion pieces on the show. And I think that's a really fair point. I mean, I think we've been rule defenders, rule supporters, rule apologists even. And I think you could make the argument like it's a little too soon. And I wouldn't say he's panicking, but it's a little too soon to push the panic button. It's a little too soon to say, here we go again. But I think also, like, we started the season 5-1 and now we're 5-4. There's no obvious win left on the schedule. I think we can win any one of those games. We can win more than one of them, but who's going to predict anything at this point?
Right.
And it's just kind of frustrating. You find yourself feeling like doesn't matter the coach, kind of like going back the last decade, doesn't matter the coach, doesn't matter the roster. We seem to be on this hamster wheel and we can't get off of it. And we've gone from 5-1 to 5-4 this season. And suddenly we went from the elation of the Colorado game and the 3-0 start and everything like, holy cow, we've turned a corner, to feeling like, have we turned a corner? And so, I don't know. I'm curious. What do you guys think about
that? And then there's the feeling of like, I don't know. It's like, okay, we have to win one of these last three, right? We haven't exactly been a program that's operated well under pressure. So the idea that we have to win one of the next three games, and it's like, okay, that's out there. Everybody knows that we have to win one of these last three.
Yeah.
I don't feel super, like, I'm Mr. Optimism. I've said this before. I don't feel super confident when there's that kind of pressure on our football team. Like, eventually they're going to have to do it to get us all like kind of believing, like, you know, hey, any game we're in, we can, you know, any game we play, we can win. Because I felt a little bit like that earlier in the year. Like, it's like, okay, I mean, we can play with just about anybody, guys. And, you know, and then you get there, you get your ass handed to you by Indiana. And then that team showed up against Ohio State. And I was back to like, hey, if we play our best, like, we can play with anybody. But they're so inconsistent. And so the inconsistency plus like recent history is like, I think, got me and a lot of other people being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, it's going to happen again. The PTSD comes back.
I agree with you, Matt. And the one thing I'll say, just after the events of just this weekend, and I'm sure you guys are going to agree, college football this year is just, it's weird.
It's weird. It's insane.
It's weird.
It's like, wild.
People are losing games that they shouldn't lose. Teams are winning games they should never win. So part of it, wonder, like, just this weekend, you saw Georgia and Miami go down. Like, there's no dominant team out there right now. And I think we're finally starting to see the NIL era of college football really take hold now that everybody's a little bit different. All teams have some skills. It's all over the place. And so I kind of give, and I shouldn't do this, but this is me just kind of drinking the Kool-Aid, that I give us the benefit of the doubt that I think every team is just kind of decent now, except for a few of them. I think everybody is just, you know, they're all right. And so it just makes it harder, I think, like, to know what to expect from week to week. Can we win out? Yes. Can we lose all of those games? Yes. I just don't know. So we're just kind of we're in a weird spot right now. It's a weird year for college.
Even look at just the Big Ten. You kind of know what you're getting with like the top four teams in the Big Ten right now. Everyone else can beat each other. Yeah. Like, once you get past like the Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State, Indiana, it's like, okay. Like, yeah, I don't – Illinois is playing Rutgers. I don't know what's going to happen. Like, Rutgers beat Minnesota. I didn't think Rutgers would beat Minnesota yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, anybody can beat anybody. UCLA beats Iowa. Like, what the hell is going on here?
That's a great example.
And this is probably what we're looking at moving forward. Like, there's going to be 3-4 really good teams in these mega conferences, and like everyone else can beat each other because it's pretty even with the NIL. Everybody's got a bunch of money and resources. Everybody's getting the huge TV money. Like, I think this is what it's going to be.
Yeah. I may be way off base here, but one thing that I keep thinking about, like, throughout different coaches that we've had, the Rule, Frost, Riley, even Pelini years and stuff, it seems like, I don't know if the fan support hurts us in a way or the attention to the program does, but I swear it doesn't matter what our record is. Sometimes it feels like we show up like we're Nebraska and we're just going to roll over them, you know? And it just like, and then the game starts and they're like, oh my gosh, like this team's really good. Like, it just does not seem like the preparation is the best sometimes. Like, we're not blue collar, you know, tough enough. Like, we're not ready to go. We're ready for Colorado, but
that seems so long ago, by the way. Yeah. That just seems, well, and like, seems like about five seasons ago.
How long? I mean, it kind of got the idea in that Chasing Three series, how long that they were getting, like, preparing for that game. Like, we had that game circled throughout the offseason, I think. And then they put a lot of balls in their basket for that one, I think.
Yeah.
I think, Olson, that's a great point. But it's frustrating, I think, for fans, because it's sort of like, it doesn't matter who the coach is. We talked last year about how Nebraska football feels like Lucy with the football. And every time we think we're turning a corner, it gets pulled away from us. Mm-hmm. And it's like, why, you know, whether that's happened within singular games where we're up, you know, it's 2014 Wisconsin. I've talked about this many times. We were up 17-3 in that game before Melvin Gordon ran for a country mile. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's happened throughout, you know, the course. Last year we were 5-3 and we bounced back after the Michigan loss and won, I think, what, 4 in a row or something like that, 3 or 4 in a row. And then suddenly couldn't close the deal and get to a bowl game. Yeah. And so it's just kind of like you want to pull your hair out because you've seen the same movie and you're holding your breath as a fan waiting for something bad to happen. And then it usually does.
Right? Yeah.
And it's so frustrating. And the other thing is, like, I'm fairly convinced, guys, that we don't necessarily, like, we probably don't have, like, top-end talent compared to Ohio State, Oregon, that sort of thing. But, like, people, I'm tired of this, like, we play well, and then after a couple of games of not playing well, people are like, well, we just don't have enough talent. We don't have enough elite dudes. I guarantee you, like, Isaiah Nair and Jamal Banks would, like the problem is not them. The problem is not, the problem is not Dante Dowdell.
Right.
Are they like first team, all Big Ten guys? Maybe not necessarily, but like we have enough.
They're good enough.
Like,
they're good enough to win football games.
TJ, you said it right there. Do you guys, if we just go back, if we re-listen to our early episodes of this season, we kept saying that exact phrase. They are dudes. We have got dudes. And we kept saying that over and over. And now all of a sudden, no, they're not dudes. They're not dudes. It's like we just turn on people immediately when things just don't go our way. So they're good players.
No,
we
I still think they're dudes. But like when you're a dude and the ball is sailing out of bounds and that's thrown to you and you have no chance at catching it or your quarterback's getting sacked. I mean, it's hard to be a dude when the whole operation just looks like it's malfunctioning as soon as the ball snaps sometimes.
I just love how much we're saying dude. Dude. Yeah. Say it again. Say it again.
Dude.
Go ahead, Nick.
What are your guys' thoughts? I keep going back for like the past 15 years. I've never been enthralled with our offensive line. And it's always been like, I would say probably other than running back, like what Nebraska kind of hung their hat on. Yeah. And I mean, people talk about, you know, the glory days with Tommy Frazier and stuff like that. I would just kill for some of those linemen that we had back in the glory days.
Like you brought up two Pelini games when you're over in the service. They had some damn good offensive lines on Pelini's teams. Like they were real good.
Yeah.
Like it just feels like it's since, I don't know, is it since like Riley where it just felt like our line, like the mentality of the line has changed. Like they just, I don't know. They used to be just mean and tough and just gritty. And like, I feel like our linemen never got, used to never get injured so much. Like we've had injury problems on the offensive line for years now, like starters.
Yeah. Yep.
I would argue, this is true, at least starting with Riley and Frost and Rule. And some years are better than others, but there needs to be a top-down commitment to running the ball. And we haven't had that consistently enough.
Yes.
Riley used to say he wants to be in the top three in the conference and running the ball. Bross used to give some variation of saying he wanted to run the ball. And to the extent that rushing numbers were good in a given year or given game under Frost, it was usually because of Martinez.
Yeah.
Right.
And ran him into the ground. The poor kid he had injury problems out there too because of it.
Yeah, he's out there with a broken jaw his last season at Nebraska. And Rule too. And I believe Rule believes it more than anybody since maybe Pelini or Solich. But then he lets his offensive coordinator go do whatever he wants. And Marcus Satterfield is not showing by the offense we see on the field. He's not showing that same commitment. We've said this 100 times. Like, I don't think most Nebraska, like, I think outsiders think all Husker fans want to run the option and have it be the 90s again. And it's kind of compelling sometimes, by the way. But anyway, I don't think
it's sexy as hell.
I think, but I think most Husker fans, like, if you want to throw it around a little bit, fine. Like, if you want to do the pro style or the zone read, triple option or like read option stuff, like whatever you want, like the Frost Oregon stuff or the, you know, Rule pro style stuff or somewhere in between or whatever, Husker fans don't care. But the mindset needs to be a run first team. And that means being able to pound, like do your bread and butter run plays over and over to the point that it's third and two or fourth and two, and we know we're going to run it. And you across the line of scrimmage know we're going to run it. And everybody in the stadium knows we're going to run it.
Yeah.
And we run it anyway.
Come
we
try
get
to,
the
come
2 yards.
Try to stop it.
Yeah. We get the 2 yards anyway. We have not had that.
No.
We have not had that since, you could argue, maybe some of Pelini's teams. And Callahan's offenses were pretty good. The pro style stuff worked because he was able to have elite recruits. But it's just so, I think that's what's so maddening to Husker fans is we sort of wrote the book on Husker power, on smash mouth football, on both sides of the ball, really. At least Rule prioritizes defense. And as you know, I think that everything's trending in the right direction on defense. But like, I think what like fans have so little patience for now is do not get up there and say that you want to give body blows and run for 75 yards in the fourth quarter. Do not get up. I don't want to hear it again.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear it again. I just want to see it. And I think that's where fans are.
Yeah.
And you can get a lot of those guys from Nebraska.
Yes.
I mean, Zach Wieger, Dean Steinkuhler, Dave Remington. Those are three of the greatest college offensive linemen ever. They're all from the state of Nebraska. That's not even
Zatica's
counting.
Zatica's
from Lincoln East.
Yeah.
Chris Dishman from Cozad. You know, Eric Anderson from Lincoln East. Mark Trainowitz was from Bellevue. I mean, a lot of these, the quote-unquote great Husker offensive linemen are from the state of Nebraska. We have big people here. We ought to use them.
That's it. Well, the Gunnar Gatula, who's basically your redshirt freshman, third team left tackle, because of injuries, has been playing and arguably has done better than anybody else so far this year.
You know, the old saying, if you don't hear a lineman's name called, he's doing a great job, right?
Yeah.
Like he's not getting holding penalties. He's not giving up sacks.
Yep.
Good work.
I want to just get a little bit into the weeds, a little bit with my offensive line critique. This may sound weird, but are we recruiting too tall of offensive linemen?
I have said that for years.
Like
Nick.
Teddy Prohaska, 6'10", Bryce Benhart, 6'9". Like Gatula, I think, is maybe 6'6". Like all these guys that we just named off, the greats, are 6'5", maybe 6'6", at the most. I mean, can you get low pad level if That's you're 6'10"?
Right. You hear when you're in midget football and you hear the phrase all the time, the low man wins, right?
Yep.
It's always the low man wins. How are you going to be the lower man when you're 6'9"?
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't know this, but after the UCLA game, Matty O was sufficiently lubricated and gave it an impromptu, while we were still at the tailgate spot, gave an impromptu monologue about the state of the program. It was very colorful, as you might imagine. And this was one of the points that you made, Matteo, was how maybe some of the offensive linemen were too tall. But it is funny.
I want to hear you guys complaining about being too tall. Right? I don't ever want to hear you spoiled elitist people with your height. I hate all of you. All right.
I'm not. I'm 5'10" wearing platforms, man. I'm not a tall guy myself, but I know what I like in my offensive line.
Don't you come at me. Yeah. Yes. Don't you talk to me.
Well, Nick and I both have a beautiful height. It's funny too that the pad level conversation, and I don't know if like just things have evolved. Here's another thing that struck me, guys, that I think we were so spoiled for so long growing up in the 80s and the 90s and watching the great Nebraska teams that were really machines. I mean, Osborne's teams, even the ones that didn't win titles, were well-oiled machines and disciplined. And they rarely laid an egg. Like they might sort of like not put up 500 yards rushing or something, but like they rarely laid an egg. And what I've discovered in recent years is like, we'll have coaches talking about things we never heard about before, pad level. Or like, you know, I remember Frost, one of the games, we were doing our walkthrough in the hotel, in the ballroom in the hotel this morning, and I felt like the guys just weren't in it or something. And that's like foreign language to Nebraska fans. Like, I'm sure that's just thing that college coaches have been dealing with for a long time. And also probably like 2024, like the new generation, whatever, or like, you know, latest generation stuff. But I just feel like in with this era of losing that we've been suffering through, there's been a lot of crap like that where it's like, I don't even remember hearing about this intricacy or that intricacy because we just did everything well.
Yeah.
You know,
and a lot of that too, I think is like it, and I hate to go to this kind of cliche thing, but like college football has changed so much since then. Those rosters of like the top 15 teams back then were just absolutely loaded. And we were one of those. Like our third stringers could have started for Kansas or Iowa State or whoever.
Yeah. And
really, for the most part, was like player run. Like those players we had back then, like they would not put up with like anybody slacking off. Like you would get whooped by those guys, like physically beaten if you didn't like do your job or show up and like do your best. And I kind of thought like, I felt like this year we kind of had like some guys that were like leaders in that respect. Like, hey, we're not going to let this thing. We're like, we're going to a bowl game. Like Gifford and some of those.
We still might, Matteo.
I know we still might, but it just feels like, and we need to get back to more of that. And I don't think it's just like having the most talented guys. You got to have guys that like are willing to, I guess, get the team together and get them to fight, for God's sakes. And how are you not ready to play in a Division I Big Ten college football game? You know what I mean? Like, how do you come out flat?
Can't
I don't understand that at all.
The Purdue game. How do you just sleepwalk? I don't get it.
Yeah.
I agree. So I want to get back to Ryan's email a little bit, guys. And I keep coming back to, first of all, it's only year two. And I know it's frustrating for Husker fans to hear, but a lot of people have made the point, hey, it took several years to get this low. It's not going to be turned around overnight. And I know people love to look at Kurt Cignetti in Indiana, even Coach Prime in year two at Colorado. I would caution on the Coach Prime thing because they were 4-8 last year, and they're basically, the Big 12 is now half group of five schools. So maybe not as impressed as the national media who's desperate to make a story out of the Colorado thing. But those examples are few and far between. Right. And no one is advocating for Rule to be fired, even if they end up going 5-7. That will be massively disappointing.
Yeah.
And please God, let it not happen. But he's still trying to build something. And I think like it's too early to, I think, push the alarm button. But I think it is fair to be, like we said on the last episode or one of the last episodes, it's fair to feel any kind of way you want to feel, a Husker fan. If you want to be angry right now, I mean, with all that Husker fans put into this program, the time and energy and emotion and resources we put into this program and are asked to put into this program, into NIL and other things, it's fine. Like, however you want to feel about it is fine. I do think, to try to put a positive spin on it, I'm reminded of what Gary Sharp said when he was on with us at, after last season. And he talked about how Matt Rhule doesn't stand pat. And he and Michael Sevier made this point too. He's going to turn over every rock until he can get this thing fixed. And I genuinely believe we saw some stubbornness with Pelini at times. We saw some stubbornness with Frost at times.
Yeah.
I think Rhule, if it means firing some coaches, whatever it might mean, I think we're going to see Rhule like realize, even if they finish 6-6 and go to a bowl game, I think he's going to be disappointed in that. I know large chunks of the fan base are going to be disappointed in that. And I think we're going to see some, like, I think it's too early to give up on the whole thing. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you just said, and you've said that before about Rhule, how he doesn't stand pat, showed it by bringing in our buddy Dana Holgorsen and Phil Snow as analysts. You don't see that really pretty high profile guys to bring in with a lot of experience as analysts like that with three games left. Like, to me, that shows like, hey, we're really trying to get one or two more here this year and get to a bowl game. So kudos to that. And Nick and I have been fans of Coach Holgorsen for quite a while now.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know what the people, like some of the people on Twitter, like talking about, well, that's nice that they have, but I wouldn't want him to be the permanent offensive coordinator. And I'm like, do you know what his offenses did? Like, talking about he's not a good fit. Do you know how many points they scored? Do you know how many yards they put on the board? Like, my God, he had some unbelievable offenses. That 2010 Oklahoma State offense he had as the OC, holy crap, they were amazing. Brandon Whedon, well, Justin Blackman, Kendall Hunter.
Ooh. I don't jinx us here, but would it be the most Nebraska thing ever if we lose like Hutmaker, Ty Robinson, and we fix the offense this offseason and the defense goes to crap next year? I'm not saying like we're
world beaters on the
defense, but can't you see us being like losing like 49-42 next year now?
Yeah.
Like they fixed the offense. Now we don't have the defense.
Yeah. I mean, now we gotta outscore everybody. And
you're a sick bastard, also.
It never lines up. If we could combine the 09 and 10 Pelini teams, if like Sue played with Taylor Martinez.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it just never lined. The offense and defense has never lined up.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, somebody, I think it was Sam McEwen, somebody posted Holgorsen's rushing yards per game for 16 seasons, I think it was. And like 13 out of the, there were a few of them, two or three of them were over 200 yards a game. Several more were like 180 to 200. And 13 out of the 16 were higher than where Nebraska is right now, which is like 125-ish yards per game. So also, like, I mean, at some point we have to, like, I think we need to be happy if he replaces Marcus Satterfield. Like, whatever, whoever he goes with, no one's going to have control over that. And whatever we do, we do. But I think we've got, like, and actually, this is where I wanted to go next with you guys. This is going to be like stating the obvious here, but we were really down last fall on the $1.4 million man offensive coordinator Marcus Satterfield. And then coming into this season, we said, we've got Dylan, we've got all these transfers. Let's have a fresh start. Let's give him another chance.
Yeah.
And 9 games in, and again, like bowl game or bust, everybody, we're in the cockpit. We're in the boat, and we're all trying to, I'm not going to use row the boat, but we're all swimming in the same direction here. We're all on board with the bowl game, but I think it's abundantly clear. Like, the man has had almost 2 full seasons. It hasn't been that much better since conference play started. It was a little better against UTEP and Colorado, but it really hasn't been that much better since conference play started. And I'm going to be like, state the obvious of the obvious here. The defense is not the problem.
Right.
Right. So like, look at our losses last year. I'm looking at our losses last year, and then I'll look at this year. 2017, so we scored 17 points against Michigan State, which is a bad Michigan State team.
Yeah.
We lost 13-10 to Maryland. We scored 10 points against Maryland. Who could forget we had it first and goal at the 5 with a chance to at least tie, if not win. And we threw a pick in the end zone.
Yeah.
We lost after, I think we blew, what was it, 14-0 lead against Wisconsin and lost 24-17 in overtime. And then we lost 13-10 against Iowa. That's just the back half of the schedule. I didn't want to go through all the games last year, but I mean, the offense was never really an asset last year. And then looking at this year, it felt like maybe they had turned a corner. I mean, UTEP is UTEP. You know, we won 40-7 against UTEP, 28-10 against Colorado, 34-3 against Northern Iowa. Even in those games, like Colorado, for instance, we won 28-10. One of those was a defensive touchdown. So we scored 21 points, yeah, and the offense basically went away in the second half. So like each of those games had little things that was like, should this be a concern? And then it's gotten markedly worse. Like they didn't look terrible. The offense didn't look terrible against our next two, was Illinois and Purdue. So we lost 31-24 against Illinois and 20, and then we won 28-10 against Purdue. But like offense was shut out in the first half against Purdue.
Mm-hmm. And missed field goals, you know, or blocked the
offense,
field goal in there.
Yeah, the offense was one play away, a missed opportunity away from beating Illinois and not even having to go to overtime, right?
Yeah.
And then we only score 14 against Rutgers. We score 7 against Indiana. You know, a ball's in the offense's hand with a chance to win against Ohio State. The ball's in the offense's hand with a chance to win against UCLA, and they can't do it. And how, I think we talked about this, Olson, on one of our recent episodes. Who in Husker Nation thought that they were going to go down and win the game at that point? Like, we've seen this movie so many times in the last 10 years.
Not a soul.
It was hard to believe. It would have been jubilant if they had, but it's just hard to believe they're going to do it. And so the offense doesn't do anything well. And like, even like there's a handful of games, you know, that Indiana was sort of a system-wide failure. Even UCLA and Illinois, which were sort of disappointments. I mean, we gave up 24 in regulation against Illinois. We gave up, the defense gave up 20 against UCLA because one of those touchdowns was a pick six.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not that bad. Like, eventually you got to have an offense in 2024 college football. Occasionally you got to be able to win a shootout, or you got to have an offense that can go win.
Yeah. What's that? Have you seen that stat? I think it's since Rule's been here. We haven't won a game where the defense gave up more than 14 points. Like, does that make sense? Like,
yeah, it was like 14 or 17, I think. Yeah. I think it's 14, though. I think it's 14.
14 points.
And it might have been Josh Peterson. Who?
I think it was Josh Peterson.
Yeah.
Front of the program. Front of the
program.
That's insane. That's an insane stat. Like,
it's just like,
it's brutal.
It's brutal. And it's all leading me to the point. It's a really long way of making the point, guys. I'm sorry. Whether Rule doesn't believe in firing guys in season, I believe any head coach deserves that sort of discretion.
Yeah.
There's no excuse for keeping Satterfield at this point.
No, they can't.
Does anybody disagree with that?
No,
I do not disagree with it, TJ, but I will say this. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. I'm saying that right now. He's not leaving. I guarantee it. And because you say that he stands pat, but he, except for removing his coaches. He's bringing in his consultants as a last resort to try and figure things out because he knows he's not going to fire him. So he's like, all right, we're bringing these people in. We got to hope in hopes that we're going to get this thing figured out and the ship righted. He will be here next season. I will say that right now.
I don't think he,
Olson, what do you think about that?
I think it's like probably 50-50 that he keeps him. I don't know. Maybe even less than 50-50. He would have to drastically improve these last three games, and we know he probably won't. I just don't see very much, and it probably comes down to offensive line play and stuff, but I just don't see like a consistency, like with the offense, like with drives and like running a play to set up another play. Right. It just feels like he's just throwing stuff at the wall. Like, I mean, let's try this play. Right. Let's try. Yeah. I mean, it's like,
I agree.
He's all over the place and maybe he's forced to do that with the protection issues and stuff. So I don't know everything what he's going through, but no, I'm probably 50-50 comes back. And does he deserve to come back? Probably not after two full years. So,
well, and I think, and others have, this is not an original thought for me. Others have suggested this. I think Holgorsen coming in, like, I kind of think Phil Snow, sure, it's nice to get an outside look at the defense too, but that was like just to not make it glaringly obvious, right? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've worked in politics for too long and like my brain goes right to scheming, but it sort of felt like that was just like an optics thing to like not make Satterfield feel too bad. But I mean, Holgorsen to me, I think this, I kind of wonder if this is like a dry run for an OC job.
That's kind of.
I hope you're right.
But then the other thing, like, what if Holgorsen like sprinkles his magic on the offense and they drastically improve under Marcus Satterfield's play calling?
Well, then you.
I hope he gets rewarded for that and not Satterfield. Right?
I thought about that too, but then you got to hope that like it's like okay, we know what happened here, and Rule knows, and everybody knows who did this, and it was Dana. It was Holger.
Right. I mean, I mean, that seems obvious now that we talk it through. Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought the same thing. Like, what if it's, the offense is better? Well, Marcus Satterfield's the offensive coordinator. He's right here. That's the guy. But
the one thing that does give me hope is Dylan Raiola.
Yes.
Regardless of who we have, I mean, I know he's going through kind of a freshman slump right now, and he's kind of regressed a little bit, but he gives me so much hope. We're going to have him. Hopefully we have him for two more years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Agreed.
I think so. And he showed what he can do.
Yeah.
And so Rule always talks about every new wrinkle that's thrown his way is great for his development down the road. And so we talked about this since the offseason. Some toe stubbing is to be expected. And then too, if you can get an offensive coordinator that puts him in a position to succeed a little bit more, you know, I think the future is still really bright for
Sure.
Yeah.
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 Woo. We've covered a lot of ground, guys.
Yeah, we have.
We sure have. Yeah.
It's a great, great conversation.
Nick,
I love your perspective. We'd love to have you join the Common Fans from time to time. Just to
Thank you for having me. Yes.
Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Absolutely. Any final thought? Oh, Jeff.
I got some things to say. I do.
Yeah,
I
bet you do. I bet you do.
So, the Common Fans, don't ruin your perfectly good meat by putting it into the form of a loaf. Just don't do that. It's disgusting. Maybe it's just the name of loaf. I don't know. I don't need that in my world of
I don't know why I never knew this. You really like meatloaf though.
I don't like meatloaf at all.
Who doesn't like meatloaf?
I love it.
We don't need it. All right. It's completely unnecessary. We don't need it. A lot of people don't like meatloaf.
You know what I love with my meatloaf, Jeff? A nice cold glass of milk.
God, that's you. There might be two F-bombs dropped on this episode today, you sicko. The other thing is I did misstate earlier. I said there is no dominant team in college football this year. There is one, and you might be able to see just judged on the background of where I'm broadcasting from today. We've got
Northern Illinois has something to say about that, Jeff.
You watch your mouth. You don't ever talk like that ever again. Irish memorabilia in the background here at my parents' house.
Why are you swaying back and forth?
I'm letting you see the pictures.
Yeah.
It looks like a bunch of guys on horses. Is that?
Yeah. It's a big deal.
OK Corral? Is that
Doc Holliday.
I hope my parents don't listen to this episode, TJ, because they will be very disappointed in you.
Well, Peggy and LaRue love me. They could never be disappointed in me.
Okay, so sure.
I hope they listen.
So there you go. Just so you can see these things. It's very cool. It's very cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Common Fans. I don't know what else to say.
I got Rod Smith over my shoulder here.
Yeah.
I see Star Wars back there. That's what I see.
That is. There's also love Star Wars.
It.
Yes.
Love it. Well, thanks so much for joining us as always, Common Fans. Huge, huge special thanks to dear friend of the program, Nick Olson, for joining us and a wide-ranging conversation. And especially thank you for your service, Nick, in uniform. And thank you to all veterans again on this Veterans Day. We are, from the bottom of our hearts, eternally grateful for all that you do, all the men and women currently in uniform and those who have served previously. We will be back at you soon. We're going to do another view from the Bland Stands, going to start talking about USC. We talked about this before, guys. We've gone a little deep. We've gone a little dark today. Find that one win.
Yeah.
I think 6-6, we can talk about what went wrong. We can talk about what went wrong in the offseason.
Yeah.
Let's go find that one win. Let's get to that bowl game. Let's say we got to 6-6, then we win the bowl game. I think everybody can get excited about 7-6. We'll be a little bit disappointed about certain games not going our way, but that'd be a hell of a lot better than another
five. It's upward trajectory.
Everybody on board.
Yep.
In the cockpit together.
Yep.
We're going to find that sixth win.
Yep.
And we're going to go to the Vandalay Industries Bowl in Sheboygan, Wisconsin on you know, December 13th at 10 a.m.
Yes.
We're pulling the kids out of school. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's going to be a Nebraska holiday, national holiday. Nebraska's back to a bowl game. So we're going to get there. I don't know if it'll be in LA. I don't know if it'll be in Lincoln against the Badgers. Maybe it'll be in Iowa City. I really hope we have that sixth win before we go to Iowa City. That's all I'll say.
Maybe we win all three and we're 8-4.
Yeah.
Yeah. There we go.
I swear to God, I'd be lying if I said that hasn't crossed my mind multiple times already.
This season would be such a success if we went 8-4.
And then you win the bowl game. And then you win the bowl game. You're 9-4.
Suddenly you're Bo Pelini.
Bo Pelini day.
Yeah. All right, Common fans. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back at you soon. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.